Welcome, everybody, to episode 188. Buzz is nodding. That means it's 188 of the Whiskey and Watches podcast. And we have a special guest with us tonight. Not only do we have all three of your usual co-hosts, but we got our friend, he's back from across the pond, Mr. Stockton. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you. And I wish, Buzz, I'm looking for some 90s gangster rap here. I wish I was episode 187. You know, 187 on an undercover cop. That was the deep cover.
Yes.
Remember that hit with, that was, I think, Snoop Dogg's first hit.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I love it.
Thank you. You guys are all too young, perhaps, but.
Spangler definitely.
Spangler definitely. I'm pointing to myself. He's the one who's doing operations on animals, and he's too young. That's great to hear.
That's a deep cut. I love it.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for being stateside, so we don't have to worry about the 5-hour time difference.
Yeah, better than six, right?
It is better than six. Although sometimes there's that weird 2-week period in the fall where it's only four.
Yes, I know. That's fantastic. Yeah, it's weird actually how 1 hour difference makes a big difference. Funny enough,
it can.
Watch a lot of NFL.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I don't know if you guys can, you get, this is an audio medium, but you, I'm assuming that nobody else can see that you've dyed your hair blue for the Lions from your former stomping grounds.
I did. I went from orange for the Dolphins to blue for the Lions, you know.
Yeah.
I got to go with the team that's left standing. Unfortunately, you know, no Cleveland left. Buzz.
Okay, so here, I think they said this on the podcast before. We actually got a babysitter that night. She came over about halftime, peeled out of here. I was not pleased with how the first half went, but figured they could pull us off. They've been in worse. Finally got to the Browns Backers bar. Places like standing room only. Browns fans. Yep. Like two drives later, pick six, fudge. And then the other one to seal it. I had better. I've had more fun, not just at a funeral, but the more I think of it, probably multiple funerals.
Maybe Flacco should have tried some smelling salts. You know?
Baker. Flacco. I love the guy, and it cracks me up that my 2-year-old will still occasionally say Joe Flacco, just like out of the blue. I really am so damn proud of him. But he had a tendency to force throws and picks the entire time they played for us, and they were always able to make that not a factor, but yeah, defense just wasn't working that night. There's a lot of misdirection on our opponent's part, and it's really hard to run the ball when you're got your fourth string tackles out there.
Sorry to go off on a football rant, but I think the 17th game was a mistake. Yeah, I really do. I mean, these teams were already beat up by 16 and 17. It was just like, I mean, as a Dolphins fan, it was just sort of like everybody just fell off a cliff on game 17. And you're like, well, that's not good. And then you make the playoffs and you lose, which means you get a bad draft pick. And you just sort of hang out in this sort of netherworld of being good enough to be interesting, but never good enough to really...
Yeah, exactly. To make it all the way to the promised land. Well, we'll see. I mean, the rumors are that Tommy Rees himself is going to be our tight end coach / like pass game coordinator.
Are they moving the team from Cleveland again? Then you're still going to lose. So Can I hijack and bring up one of my points that I promised?
Yeah,
I
was gonna always.
So you made a comment, and I think I was on my run with the dog down here in Florida about there was a lot of anti-Star Wars on this show, which I I'm not really like a Star Wars junkie or anything, but Buzz, I've listened on and on to your, you know, arcane mentionings of Greek mythology, and the rest of your guests or co-hosts sit there and, you know, leave some dead silence usually when you pull these things up. Right?
My wife does the same thing. I'm used to it at this point.
Fair enough. Well, you go and badmouth Star Wars as a space opera, and I remember in high school, it was funny, I had this, you would have liked this teacher, you probably would have been his best student and his worst student, because he would have, been talking back all the time. And Star Wars was a subject because it was, you know, the hero cycle, and Joseph Campbell was the subject matter there. And I really thought that, you didn't really give it the right level of credit by just calling, you know, shrugging it off as a space opera.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. Okay, so
Baroque space opera now, by the way.
Hero's journey, Joseph Campbell, like, I get it. But I guess it's maybe a question of expectations, right? Because
were you watching that in 1977 in the theater?
Not. Yeah. Because I think people, it's not sci-fi. It's certainly not hard sci-fi, right? There's different genres, and it's not like I'm a giant sci-fi like head, not an enthusiast.
And it's surprising, by the way, because sci-fi, I think, to some degree, is better, like the storytelling and the fusion of kind of what's to come and all this stuff is actually probably more mythology based than a lot of other crap. Oh, that's
without
out there.
A doubt, and.
But go ahead.
I just, it is a hero story, but it's not, I don't know, the technology side of it never really comes in. It's vastly entertaining, but like even like Star Trek, for example, the actual technology or the implications of just even traveling vast distances, things like that, come into the story way more. Whereas I find Star Wars is just, it's a story set in space.
Just part of a story.
And it's, so, I mean, obviously the original ones were good. They've loaded them up with all sorts of schlock since.
Down with that. Rolling Stone, which I don't even know if that's a thing anymore, but they just published a top 150 sci-fi movies of all time. Hmm. So I think Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back were two of them on there. I don't know what else, but it's worth a look. I thought of you when you started talking about this, and I had just read that list. It's interesting. So, something you can go check out. Bone up on your sci-fi. The Andromeda Strain was on there, which was fantastic. I don't know if you ever saw that, but that was really good.
I haven't. I've watched literally a ton of Star Trek. Some Stargate. Like I said, I haven't gotten into it nearly as much. I mean, I know some people, like my brother reads plenty of sci-fi and all of that.
I need to line you up with my dad. He's big into sci-fi, like old school sci-fi books and everything, like what is it, The Moat in God's Eye and different things. Like he's deep. But Anyhow, the other two here are quickly fading.
I'm back in the conversation now. Where were we?
So,
by the way,
what I was just going to say is Star Trek is, if we had actually gone into it, Star Trek was way, way more my game, like second grade through sixth grade. Went to a Star Trek convention, had the uniforms, but it was all Next Generation. So yeah,
Captain Picard Day.
I mean, you got that. Literally just the kids are starting to play with it now.
Solid.
Romulan Warbird, ooh, anybody?
Nice.
You know, just all this stuff's just sitting literally within fingertips. So.
Once again.
Just saying.
Surprised you haven't busted those out before.
Yeah. Once again, due to this being not a visual medium.
Yeah. It really made my point for the other three people on this video call.
Yeah.
But
the roughly 1,000 of you listening just shit out a lot.
Yes.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Yes.
So,
but anyway.
So you're, Spangler, I gotta say, like, with this hat you're wearing, at a distance, when I look really quickly, it looks like an old school Orioles hat, and I know it doesn't look like an Orioles hat at all.
It
doesn't. But with these glasses and this mustache going, you remind me of like an early 80s Baltimore player, John Lowenstein.
Was he a pitcher?
He was not, and he was not a great hitter. Like, click on this link here. And you'll see the baseball card from 84. He's from Cleveland, I think. And you'll see, like, with the glasses on. It's epic.
Oh, nice.
Yep. No, yeah, I can see that. Yep.
I like it. I dig it.
If you've got anybody from Baltimore, they'll know this guy. He was a fan favorite.
You know, I lose a couple pounds. I think, I think the similarity is pretty much there.
Yeah. Put the stirrups on and rock it.
Clay.
All right, Spence, I'm sorry. I'm
oh, no, we're good. So. No, we're just fine. But we should figure out what everyone's drinking and wearing before we get into the plethora of topics that we have. See, I busted out Buzzy's Word of the Day calendar for this one. So, Mr. Stockton, what do you have on the wrist and what are you drinking and have you been drinking?
Yeah, I have and am. So I got home late from work tonight, and I cracked a Miller Lite in the garage with my dad, and walked in, and ultimately moved on to a... He has a friend who's every year sends him a different bottle of Uncle Nearest whiskey from Tennessee. And last year it was like a 114, which I'm not going to lie was pretty strong. Yeah. So tonight I'm drinking their Bottled in Bond. So it's 100 proof, 1856. I mean, 100 proof is not for the faint of heart. And but it's smooth. It's good. I like it. So for those who don't know that distillery, I think it's like the oldest distillery in Tennessee, African-American owned, which is kind of cool. And on the wrist is a 1950s, I guess if you likened it to an Omega, it would be called a Chocolatone. It is a Longines in 14 karat gold. So it was cased in America. And yeah, my dad kind of handed this over to me during the visit here. And
that's sweet.
Yeah, I visited. Thank you. Kind of untouched case, which is wild. It's got these like really kind of neat lugs and Omega, and I think Patek used a case like this, but the it was without a strap. And I visited Eric Wynn today, and he very nicely hooked me up with a really nice honey wind strap, as he calls them. So I think the strap is made in Minnesota. So
that's a really good. So the if I can see that correctly, is that like a square case where it's just kind of been just like pinched a little bit?
Pinched on both sides.
Yeah.
Like if it were elongated, it would look like a hourglass. Yeah. And it's got little lugs here. So it's actually like 34 by 38. So the length is actually halfway decent. Like it works.
Yeah.
You know? That's become my sort of latest addiction, like these sort of gotten into rectangular watches again, which is, or non-round watches.
Except to be square.
Well, you should, yeah, well, but we should briefly talk about one of your other pickups that might need a new mainspring, but was pretty solid.
Yeah, and
okay.
Absolutely. We can do that.
Yeah, we should, so, because it's got a tie to the area that the one of us hails from and two of us currently live in.
Absolutely, yeah. How about you guys? What are you drinking and wearing?
Go well, Buzzy.
I was drinking a Sazerac Rye Manhattan. It's gone.
Nice.
It's, you know, Manhattans, were I the idle rich, I wouldn't do that much differently than what I do currently, but I would have an impossibly clever valet, and we would like just go on adventures and stuff. Think of like Jeeves and Wooster, right? I'd be drinking Manhattans by the pitcher, and I guess at a certain point in the day you could drive me around, that would work. When I have a Rye Manhattan, the first sip or two I think, oh, it's a little spicier than normal, but by the last sip I think that was a tasty beverage.
Tasty burger, I get you there.
That's right. yep, it was a delight. And on the wrist, I've got my Breitling Colt Chrono Super Quartz.
Mm. Very nice. Very cool.
Thanks.
Nice. Bangler.
Yeah, I reckon I'll go next year. So I've got my pair of Old Elk siblings right here.
What's that stuff? You drink pretty like, different stuff. So what is that?
So Old Elk is a distillery out of Fort Collins, Colorado. Greg Metz is their master distiller, blender. They put out some really good stuff. These two are both out of their master distiller range? Master blender? Yes, I believe they are both bourbon.
Well, I've got a question for you guys after everybody goes, but go ahead. Sorry.
So it's out of their master something range. Both are really good. The four grain, honestly, Old Elk currently right now is putting out some of the best stuff in the American bourbon scene. I highly recommend all of their stuff to anybody. Even their lower end stuff is really good.
Hard to find.
Honestly, no. It is not super hard to find. It's just one of those ones that really hasn't caught on to be like hard to get. But yeah, all of this stuff is really solid, especially their black label stuff. So I've got the four grain here, and I've got their 2022 Infinity Blend. I'm currently trying to track down their 2023 Infinity Blend, which just recently got released. So if anybody knows where that is, please send me a message. But I love Old Elk, love all the stuff they're doing. And on the wrist is my Cincinnati Watch Co., as I affectionately call it, my FC Cincinnati Watch. I've been wearing this one for the past couple days because I'm very excited about their new release coming out this month, actually.
Nice.
Yeah, that one does. Mike, that one might be a little bit more up your alley, the one that they've got coming out here soon. Yeah.
The Everyman's Ming.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. It does look, it's named after the kind of the eclipse that's coming. We'll have a near total solar eclipse here in April. And it's got
a total eclipse. Kind of
got
the
some
heart.
Ming vibes going on.
I
correct by
said
the cutting
that.
Crew.
That's not
yeah,
fair.
You know,
it's not fair.
By the cutting crew, but made more famous by the Dan Band.
yeah,
love Dan Band.
Band.
nice. I guess I'll go next, Buzzy. I was, very similar to you. I didn't do a Sazerac Rye Manhattan, but I did go and pick up some Michter's Rye.
Oh, you Michter's said you were going to do that.
I was, and I did. I followed up because something we got Mr. Stockton coming on. I need a rye. So I went and got Michter's because I knew I can get it. Picked up a bottle for the cork pull at the parents' night out at the oldest school that's coming up in a week and a half, and then cracked open a bottle of Method, put two Amarena Fabry cherries in it with some Angostura bitters, and man, it is. Like, this is going to probably have to be the House Manhattan. Now that I know that we can ship that we can ship the method to Indiana to the grandparents' house. We can get it more regularly. We can have a nice steady stream of method vermouth coming to Cincinnati.
So good.
Technically, probably slightly illegally, but no, I mean,
but it's pure.
Not really.
That's not stepped on.
Can I get that in Florida? Can I get it in Florida?
You might be able to. I don't know if they have a distribution in Florida, but they like they might be able to ship.
Okay.
So you should definitely. I say, it, you know, if it, I know your dad's a big whiskey drinker, but I don't know if he's a cocktail guy or not.
He's a straight whiskey drinker.
Okay.
But it's so good.
But either way,
that makes
still good.
Him. If I were still, here, so he would drink a Manhattan if I made it. But he's otherwise he's straight to the punch.
I mean, the stuff keeps for a long time, so.
Just that's make true. Sure you can, it's true.
Just make enough of them that you can kill most of a bottle and then just keep it refrigerated. And then on the wrist, well, I've got two again. I've been wearing the Apple Watch on the off wrist just because it's – can I tell you – I've told Buzzy this. The weirdest thing that I enjoy wearing this, one is having the temperature and not having to dig out the phone for the temperature. It's a weird – especially because we've had crazy weather here lately, knowing what the temperature – and the temperature range is for the day is helpful because it gives you the high and the low, and then the dot moves along this little band on where you are. It's actually nice.
You can put a widget on the front of your phone screen, and you don't have to.
I can, but if the phone is in my pocket, then I got to dig it out.
It's really hard effort, tough effort.
It is tough effort.
Yeah.
But the other thing I really enjoy is dual-factor authentication for the work computer. I don't have to have the phone for that. I just type in the
fair enough.
So like it just comes up and I just press the like I actually enjoy that quite a bit.
That's good.
And then on the on the other wrist, I've got the Fratello Oris from.
Nice.
Has it been 3 years since you guys did this, since this one came out? Three? It's been three, right?
Oh, yeah. Every bit of that. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
By the way, I didn't announce that I have my wedding ring on my finger since you announced like an Apple Watch on your other wrist. I didn't realize we were just naming every single thing on our arms. I'm wearing a t-shirt too, by the way.
Well, it's okay. I just sent Nacho the review article for it. So
nice.
Yeah.
So I do have a question. Because every time I come over to the U.S., I usually stock up on a little bit of whiskey to bring back now to England. And I got into one of these articles reading about American single malt whiskey. And that was a little bit new to me. And I bought a couple bottles last time. I bought the Claremont Steep from Jim Beam. And I bought the, what is it, West? What's it? What is it, Evan? West,
They're
from.
Whoa.
Are they from
West.
Oregon or Washington?
High West, maybe.
West.
Is it High
West? Way
High,
West.
No. High West, yeah.
No. Yeah, it's a big one.
I don't know off the top of my head. West whiskey brand.
I see High West, and I see
Westland. Yeah.
I have not seen that one. Yeah, that's one I don't really know much about.
So I checked a bunch of sites that kind of gave like some of the recommendations, and that one came up a lot. And then I always dig Jim Beam, so I just bought it. Right, it's pretty good stuff. I like it. I like the single malt stuff. It has its own section at Total. Total down here. The big liquor. Store in Florida, so
yeah,
I don't.
As it should.
I don't see any of it in restaurants over in London. I don't know over here if it's got any kind of marketing in restaurants either. Have you seen it at all?
I mean, honestly, from what I know from the American single malt scene, is that it really kind of first hit the market. At a very large level last year, probably mid-year last year. I think last summer is when I really started to see a bunch of like new stuff come into the market. Because I think I bought a Yellowstone American single malt, early last year, like July maybe.
Like and then Jack I also Daniels have Claremont makes Steep. One apparently that's supposed to be quite good, hard to find.
Yeah, their special release American single malt. Yeah, that one I've never seen before, but I've seen. People that have it, I'm very jealous of them. But yeah, no, it really hasn't been super popular until very recently. So I feel like it's still in that you have to be an early adopter to really get into it phase. You know,
it's expensive though. I will say, on like a par for par bottle, it's not cheap. Like the Jim Beam stuff was every bit of like $55, you know, which is sort of like a, you know, that's a plunge to take on something you've never tried before and probably couldn't.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, I'll drink about anything, but, you know, it was, I didn't know what I was getting into. I mean, it was like properly cool to open something up and think, okay, I'm ready to be surprised, you know? So
yeah,
it's good. It's really good. So, give it a whirl. Oh, Buzz, you're quiet. See? Yeah. Quieted you, finally.
It's no mean feat.
No, it is not.
No, I'm fully out of my depth with booze. Any sort of in-depth knowledge of it, that's a Spangler deal. I lack the words. My brain doesn't like work in this whole like I can taste something and describe it. I have like the very like caveman level. Like I drink something.
Who cares about that stuff? You either like
exactly,
it or
you don't. Like ugh, it's good or no good.
Well, then you have to like it enough to wreck it. So there's the different layers. I like it enough to recommend it. I like it, but you know, it's fine. I'm not going to go out of my way to recommend it. And then it's like, eh, I don't like it. Although Buzzy has shifted his, he's targeting a WAR. We were talking about baseball stats before you joined, like some awesome, like early 90s and mid 90s baseball stats that all the nerd baseball accounts on Instagram like talk about, or we'll put across the feed. But Buzzy is like settled on like a wins above replacement for his alcoholic beverages that have around 1 to 3, especially on the beer side. You know, we're talking Modelo, Foster's, you know, all just the standard, like the Miller Lights of the world. Like, you know, you just go out there. The Oakland A's of beer consumption is where Buzzy's at right now.
Which is hilarious because they're the ones who invented all those statistics. But yeah, I don't understand all that crap, by the way. I don't. I'm an ERA, win-loss, strikeout. You know, K's per nine, I'm good to go with that. You know,
well, and that's what
batting
we were,
average.
That's what we were talking about earlier. We were talking about things like, you know, however many seasons it was that Tony Gwynn, who had below 20 strikeouts for the entire 162-game season. Or like the number of walks Greg Maddux had in the season, how many of them were intentional versus like more of them more than not. Just so, absolute wild stuff.
So I'm like a huge baseball fan and like baseball history fan, and on the plane ride over I watched It Ain't Over, the Yogi Berra movie on I think it's for you guys, I think it's streaming on Prime.
Okay,
it was really good and it was interesting. It was like spurred on because his granddaughter in like 2015 I think was watching like something like the five greatest living baseball players, and I think it was in Cincinnati they brought him out, and like Johnny Bench, Hank Aaron, blah blah blah, but Yogi Berra wasn't in there. And when you look at his stats and look at how infrequently he struck out, like he struck out like 20, I think he averaged like 24 strikeouts a year for like 7 years in a row. The dude was a catcher, you know, like had to have been tired and incredible. Yeah, I love baseball from that period. I think it's just amazing when you look at those pictures and everything. It's fantastic stuff. Really good. So we could talk about baseball cards on another episode. So
we could. We should. Between that and sneakers, you know.
Yeah.
So what else do we want to talk about today?
Well, we should talk briefly about your new Gruen.
Oh, yeah.
So Spangler brought one of these up a long time ago.
Yeah.
And oh, man, I did. Yeah.
It's funny, like the Curvex, I feel like back in like the 80s or 90s when my dad was buying watches from this period, brought up the Curvex because it was like a really groundbreaking watch. You know, the movement was built on like sort of levels to deal with the case. It wasn't like this little baby movement shoehorned into the flattest part of the case. And it was, yeah, it was groundbreaking. And if you go look at a couple sites out there, they made some stuff that there was one that even was made to curve around the narrow end of the arm.
What?
So you'd wear it like here, and if you were driving, you'd have this watch staring at you. But it was like very acute, like C-shaped, yeah? They really made some wild stuff. And I bought a 1930s Movado recently, and it's called a CurvaPlan. And it was kind of similar in concept, but very long, like 41, 42 millimeter lug to lug. So you're getting into spitting distance with like a Datejust, right? So wears really nicely. And I thought, like, damn it, I'm American. I want to go look for a Gruen Curvex. And they made some models like the Majestic that went up to like 50 mil lug to lug. That's properly big. But I was just looking at whatever was popping up on eBay, and you look, and most of them are gold filled. Most of them are just rotten, just like totally rotten. Then you've got later quartz re-editions. Who wants that? And this one comes up that looked basically like new old stock, box, papers, everything, and 14 karat rose gold, solid. Just needed a new mainspring. And the guy listed it for like $790 out of Chicago. It was like a coin seller, you know. Probably took it in as like, we buy gold type stuff, you know. And meanwhile, you see like a lot of garbage listed for like $1,000. I don't know if it ever sells. And, you know, I went back and forth with him and made offers. And we sawed off somewhere around $700. And it arrived here. And it's mint. I mean, it's wild. Like, the box outside has Time Hill, you know, on the box, like, the picture of Time Hill. It's got all the paperwork inside with Time Hill, and, like, I'll take pictures for you guys and send it, because I think it's Cincinnatians. Yeah. Is that what you're called?
I think it is.
Yeah. Skyliners.
That's right. Every Sunday after Mass.
It's...
As long as the kids are good, that's what we threaten them with if they're acting up.
Oh, man, I'd act up every weekend. Give me that spaghetti, baby. So, but it's got the box, and inside it's even got the tag, which shows that the original price was $92.50, and it's from 1945, the watch. So Gruen was interesting. I mean, they were Swiss and they were American, right? And I think to avoid customs and stuff, they cased stuff in the U.S. So the case maker was Wadsworth, who I believe was in Dayton, Ohio. Originally started out as like a pocket watch case maker and then graduated a bit to watches. And yeah, it's just like a fascinating piece. It even has like the original on the sides, like where it was brushed. It still has that. And it has a signed Gruen crown, and it's badass. Like, I can't wait to get this thing fixed. And the wild thing is, like, it's absolutely as good as the Movado I bought. And it's kind of American, which is cool, you know? Super cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's also like 41 mils tall. So it's totally wearable. Totally wearable. And I mentioned I got a really nice strap from Eric today, and he gave me a nice strap for that one too, so I can't wait. Yeah, really, really nice stuff. So yeah, I would say, like, if you can find a good Curvex out there, I think you would really, you know, look at the lug to lug. That's the only thing that matters. Like, if you see something that's like 28 or 32, it's going to be really small. But if you see something like high 30s to mid 40s, rock and roll. I think it would be a really, really gratifying piece to wear. Yeah. And Spangler, you're hipster enough that you can, you know, wear that.
Did the mustache give it away?
Yeah, you can do whatever you want with that. So just don't.
Yeah, I was gonna.
Don't stick it in the business end of a horse or anything.
You know? Yeah, no, I don't have to do that anymore.
I will say my pinky
finger is very trained at this point.
He doesn't have to do it any less either. A bunch.
Oh, okay. No, all my strength has been now. Tip my finger here. But I will say, Mike, you've hit the points of when you're shopping for a Curvex, right? Like you said, most of them are just like rotten dials. Very hard to find. A lot of them are not the 50 mil or whatever that really weird long one is that I think most people would really like. And finding the full solid gold cases, especially in those longer lengths, is a very challenging task.
Yeah.
From what I found in my search.
I don't know why somebody didn't buy this. Like $790. Like, okay, the gold value alone was probably half the price. And like the guy, you know, when these watches, when you take the case back off, the movement is attached to the dial. So he took pictures. I mean, the pictures weren't amazing, but you could tell the dial was absolutely flawless. Yeah. Had like a couple little scratches, but it was like, it wasn't rotten. It wasn't anything. And I'm thinking, why wouldn't somebody buy this? It was just, it was weird. And it was exactly as portrayed. There was no, and in my book, $700 for a solid gold watch that is actually wearable. Just blew my mind. Yeah. I'm going to have to spend probably a couple $100 to get it up and running, but still that's good value, you know?
No doubt.
Definitely.
For sure.
I will dig out my Eric Davis t-shirt and I'll wear my Gruen, you know, with that. So
you guys know who
Eric Davis was, right?
We know who Eric Davis is.
Jeez. got some blank stares there in Cincinnati.
Well, to be fair, only one of us is actually from here.
This is true. He's also the one who doesn't live
here. Yeah. Funny how that works out.
Yeah. But you do. You live in the other Queen City, so you know.
Yeah, which I recently found out has more of a claim to being the Queen City than Cincinnati does.
Probably
Charlotte.
Yeah, it was right named after Queen Charlotte.
Yeah, fair
enough. Before Cincinnati was established,
yeah.
And Cincinnati was named Queen City after a poem that people just assumed he was talking about Cincinnati. He didn't really specifically name Cincinnati in the poem. Now, of course, I'm forgetting who wrote that poem, but you know. People get the gist of what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, there are different forms of monarchy, okay? We all think of hereditary monarchy because we're wired to think that way because of the English. But most monarchies were not hereditary. It's to whoever was best. There's a lot of voting for kings.
They were achieved.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
should we get on to our other two topics?
Yes.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, before we all start building new Ford Edsels, let's go ahead and I had to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Good reach there.
It was.
On our upcoming topic, I've now remembered the other thing I wanted to talk to Buzz about, but we'll get there.
Okay.
So, okay, good.
When we talk about the Edsel, we'll get there. Just one of the other things that, you know, Buzzy and I talked about, but I felt like, you know, given your affinity for Breitling and also being a vintage watch kind of collector, I'm curious as to your thoughts on their acquisition of UG, kind of the back catalog, and I don't know, it in some ways it makes me hopeful, some ways it makes me nervous. I'm just kind of curious as to your thoughts on what direction you would hope they would take it, what direction they might take it. And I think somebody said that they were planning on making it kind of a premium or higher end brand, which we all know that at times we feel like Breitling's like somewhere around 15% maybe overpriced on certain things. If I had to put a number on it, it's just, I'm curious as to what your thoughts are there.
So, and this is where, you know, Buzz, I'd listened to you last week here and on Spirit of Time, and I can't remember, where did you talk about UG recently? I guess Spirit of Time, right? And I know the comment, and I'll lead with this, because I think the comment came up in your discussion with Matt about, like, wow, you know, they could, like, throw a BO1 in there and, like, bang, be off and running, right? And I mean, no promises here, but from what I have been told directly, that is not what's going to happen.
Very nice.
So, yeah, so they really are going to take their time here. They paid a lot of money for the name, and for all the, you know, the whole kit and caboodle here. But they are going to take their time. They're going to make something very, you know, much more higher end, I would say, in terms of, you know, finery and focusing on movement, dial quality. I think there's work going on in the movement side to figure out, you know, creating bespoke movements, but, you know, probably produced, you know, somewhere locally. I think to set up a brand new manufacturer to build movements is pretty daunting at this stage. And a lot of companies do that, by the way. Like, you know, you have very high-end movement makers like Vaucher and Concepto, and work. You can work with others to do that. And I would guess it's going to go in that direction. If any of you have seen the watches from Sylvain, or the watch from Sylvain Bernaron, who's the head of design from Breitling, he's created something. It's bad to call it like a Cartier crash, but it's like a very kind of amoebic type case with a wild movement inside that somehow works. That's his venture into doing something sort of unchained, right? So Breitling, you've got to work within some constraints and things. You've got history, you've got expectations under certain models, and you've got to make it mass volume. And my guess is that with UG, it'll be something in between what he's done on his own and Breitling, right? Because it's going to be higher end, higher price point, and they're not going to rush this. I think it's going to be, from what I'm told, it wouldn't surprise me if we've got a couple years here to wait until we start to see watches. You're not going to see this right away. The other thing is, you know, before buying, there was a lot of work done in talking to some of the big retailers to make sure, you know, accepting the brand and everything was going to be, you know, that acceptance would be there, and it's there. So I don't think they're going to half-ass this. Yeah.
That's
good.
That would be excellent.
So, there you go. That's what I know. Yeah. I think it's going to be exciting. I'm, for one, not hoping for a direct reissue of like a pole router or something. I'm hoping for something that carries on the name and somehow makes good on it and all that good stuff. So yeah, we're going to see. It's interesting. I mean, it's a name. It's a company that made a lot of interesting watches, you know, between the pole router and all the different compacts models and the complexity and everything of those. There's a lot to consider there. On the other hand, I mean, I sit back and I say, wow, you know, there are a lot of watch companies out there today, and there are a lot of watch companies that have a lot of watches and displays right now, you know? So what are they going to bring to the table? I think a couple years from now, arguably the world, the economy will probably be different today than, you know, different than today, maybe more robust or whatever. And hopefully they'll make a big splash. But I'm excited to see it. I think it's a brand that long talked about sort of saying, okay, of all the comebacks, where is this one? So, okay, I'm going to stop talking.
No, I mean, I think we had all kind of hoped that was kind of the approach they were going to take. I think the one thing that I think would be curious is to see if they do try to come back with a more modern, like a modern pole router or something like that. And I don't want to say like, but like, I'm hoping that there'll be some pieces in that collection that are a little bit more approachable than where they may take some of the new try compaxes and things like that. But be interesting to see where they try to, how much they try to separate Breitling and Universal Genève, or where the overlap kind of is. I feel like there's going to have to be some overlap between the two. Be kind of curious as to where that manifests itself and in what type of model.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, if I had to guess, and I have no information, I would think that like something like a micro rotor would loom large. I mean, that was a big piece of the pole router's history, right? And I just think that if you're going to try to go a little bit upscale with like a three-hand watch, you probably need something like that in order to help justify it. So
yeah,
it would make sense. It's kind of exciting, and to know that there's a big budget behind it, and then you know, good distribution and everything. It's been a long time since we've seen a splash like that, right? So
yeah.
You guys wouldn't remember it, but I remember like when. Gosh, when was it? I think like the 90s when Lange and Glashütte sort of came on the scene, and that was wild. Like, I still remember my dad having the catalog for Lange by the Easy Chair, you know, and it was like this big, thick catalog, and it's like they went for it, you know, like from one day to the next, here they were like proclaiming, hey, we belong in the same crew as Patek and Vacheron and everybody else, and you're like, who the hell is this brand, you know? Like, you could read about it in the thing, but, you know, they were there, and they obviously spent the money and all the marketing materials and everything, and I guess you're going to see that with Universal, so.
Yeah, you know, I think at this point, when it comes to the watch world, I think if you really want to get out there and make a name for yourself, you really do have to make a splash and just go all in with it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are kind of afraid of, but, yeah, the brands that do it, you know, more power to them. But, you know, thinking about this, you know, acquisition or just purchase from Breitling for UG, you know, being in a time now where people are saying that the next trend is going to be vintage, aesthetic, smaller sized watches, I think Breitling has positioned themselves in a very good space to be able to like produce this within their portfolio. So I think it's a smart buy on their end. And I think, you know, Mike, you said that you didn't really exactly want a recreation of a pole router. You know, I wouldn't say I really want a recreation of one of their compact lines or the pole router, but I certainly would want a watch that is heavily inspired from those watches. So, I mean, you know, you got to carry on the brand's legacy somehow, which I know that brands probably would like to, or at least Breitling would like to add their own, I guess, mark on the UG history by creating a new watch, but that's also pretty scary. You know, I'm sure they will have their own watches on the UG line, but I would also like to see, you know, them come out with a pole router-esque or a compact-style-esque watch.
I think you will see the names, and I think you will see nods to the past. And again, I don't have any... I have no other insight aside from the fact that they're really going to be focused on the details of the watches, like making sure that these are properly... Yeah, just the finishing is really where it needs to be. The other thing, I think there will be probably at the very high levels, there will be some crossover. Like I mentioned, Sylvain on the design side, I think he'll be on both places, but UG is going to have really its own management team and team. So this isn't going to be like, badge engineering. I wanted to make that. That's kind of what I wanted to say, Buzz. That, you know, it's not going to be badge engineered watches. That's what I'm told at this stage.
Yeah, that's excellent, because there's always a fear of doing the easy thing, which I guess I don't understand why you would do that. Maybe we've just been conditioned that companies tend to like to do short-sighted things to make numbers.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's obviously a revenue carrot out there, like a short-term one, but that doesn't lead to much, does it?
Yeah.
So, ultimately. So, yeah, so I think I'm kind of sitting back, hoping to be impressed. I'm certainly rooting for them. I think it's a cool thing. Let's see. But yeah, everything I've heard so far is that no, they're really gonna do this the right way, and the way that I think, you know, watch enthusiasts would appreciate. So
awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, the last thing we wanted to talk about, well, before we get there, you mentioned gangster rap earlier, Buzzy. We forgot to mention that Stringer Bell wears a brew.
Yes, he does.
We forgot to mention that. I don't know if you saw that, Mike, but they had Idris Elba was he was getting interviewed somewhere, and he's wearing a Brew Metric chronograph, which kind of a big deal for that brand from New York, which was pretty sweet.
That is a big deal. And yeah, I don't own one of those watches, but you've certainly shown me yours, and I follow them, and I do dig them. I'm really trying to, it probably sounds bad, but I'm trying to behave on that front, because I know those kinds of watches are like, just don't know how often I'd wear them, but yeah. They're really attractive. So,
yeah, and the fun thing about that is, and I've talked about this, Buzzy and I, we both have the Retromatic, and then I also have the new Metric, and he also has a new Metric Auto, which, of course, that's the danger with the micro brands, is that like as they continue to go on, like the design and everything, like just it gets tighter. Like you can just tell, like the design language is working. The finishing is getting better. Like it just, there's everything, not to say that the older ones are worse, but
no,
like,
it's an evolution.
It's a more evolved, right?
Yeah. It's a better evolved product. And you're just like, you want to see what he does next, but you're like, oh man, now I'm going to want to buy another one. And like pretty soon you've got two, three or four of them in the collection. You're like, I want the one that I think of when I have that, like when I think of Bruin, like right now, the Metric is just, it's phenomenal. So the Retromatic isn't getting as much wear time, but everything that John does is fantastic.
Yeah. Like I looked at both of those models, and I think your latest piece, like the gold one, I would probably not wear the earlier one, because I think the new one is super cool. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. And he did one in full PVD black that kind of looked, that had like that vintage 80s aesthetic. And then he's got like a black and gold with a, like the way he's done the dial that's circular in kind of the square watch, there's some dead space between the edge of the case and the dial. And that's now carbon in one of them. So like, it's just a really cool, it's a blacked out watch with gold accents and like a carbon kind of, it's pretty slick. So but we figured we'd give John a shout out, because we saw Idris wearing one in an interview that made the tour of the watch universe.
It was kind
of
heck. Does he? I mean, I know he's English, but does he live in the U.S.? I don't know.
I have no idea. But apparently, he owns multiple brews, which I think is crazy.
It's cool. Yeah.
You just love it because you know it's not some paid lame sponsorship thing. Because it's like
he found it out, right? Found it and he chose it, right? That's cool.
He's like, I want that, and the cool thing too, like Buzzy said, is it's not just that, but it's not like a LaVenture, which is a independent brand, but like started as a micro brand and is now higher, and it's like, okay, this is a watch that, when they're available, because incredibly accessible. So like now that is when they aren't sold out, because the Metric Technicolor that he was wearing, it comes out and then disappears rather quickly, because it's one of the most popular models that they make. But like when it's available, it's, you know, a $400 to $500 watch. So I think that's the coolest thing about it, is like, I like that, I'm going to get that. And he got it, and he was wearing it in an interview. So
yeah, Very cool.
Makes me want to just put my brew on and rewatch some Wire.
Yeah.
So Spangler, walk us through what we're going to be doing next, since this is your idea.
Yeah, no. So I actually had an idea that everybody accepted here, which we love to see. So basically we're going to be building our own little Franken-watch here. Although I have a feeling that everybody has their own different categories for this, but you know, that's fine. That's what we're about here. You know, why not? Just everybody do their own thing. But you know, basically it is, everybody is picking various parts of different watch brands, to build their own, I guess, ideal type of watch. Style of watch, you know, what have you, whatever. It's basically a mix and match of different watch brands, as you know, clasp, bracelet, etc., to make a singular watch. So, yeah.
I'm not going first. I want to hear what you guys, Evan, you came up with it. You got to go first.
Yeah, you got to lead us off.
I was going to say, yeah. So, you know, I'm getting into it. Let's go for it. So I did, for mine, I did five different watch aspects, right? Clasp, bracelet, case, movement, and dial. And I figured, just to keep it interesting, I would not double up on any watch brand for either of those things.
Clarifying question. Not like within a single Franken watch, or like, do you have like a stable of Franken watches and all of them only have a single design element per company?
Wow.
So for mine, I am just doing, like, say for the clasp, right? I picked one watch brand and one style clasp from that watch brand to put into this. Now, to be fair, I think, let's see, what do I have here? I guess I have two for the case, same watch brand, but, you know, one bracelet, one type of bracelet from one manufacturer, dial, one brand, one dial, then I have the movement, I guess I have one type of movement from them, so, yeah, I'm doing one type from each watch brand for each specific category. Of course, you guys can do whatever you want to do, because, you know, at this point, it doesn't really matter. We're here having fun.
Are you going to walk us through your watch, or are you going to walk through one element? Let's walk through one element and just keep going around. Yeah.
Come on, hair doctor. Lead us off.
Yeah.
I'll start with the first one here on my list here. You know, everybody knows I love Rolex, but, you know, I feel like on this list here, I had to choose something different for the clasp, because we all know Rolex's clasps are just chef's kiss. But I went with the next best option here.
Yeah, the Tudor, didn't he? Yeah, he put the Tudor
Tudor. Yeah, of course I did.
It's Tudor. This guy.
I had to pick the Tudor. I mean, Omega's up there too. Omega was my next option here, because I wanted to save Rolex for something else. But yeah, no, I went with T-Fit. You know, it's the next best thing. It's arguably as good, you know, for everyday purposes. Nothing wrong with it. It's great.
Okay.
And of course, if you guys have the same one, you know, why not?
I like leading with the clasp, because this is the least... gives me the least idea of what's going to be going on, right? This could be a field watch. This could be a... 48 millimeter Bentling for Breitling monstrosity.
Bentling for Breitling.
Bentling, not Bentley. Bentling.
Bentley. Yeah.
What have you got, Buzzy? What? I guess we'll start with clasp, and Spangler can build a bezel-less monstrosity. I will choose a bezel for my watch.
I have three, but the third's kind of a shit post almost in makeup watch form.
We're talking clasp, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So the watch that I'll go with has the also has a Tudor clasp, but it's the hidden foldover one on the Royale, if you will.
Mm.
Ooh.
Okay.
Interesting.
The cheese stands alone. Nobody would have brought that up, you know? Mm-mm. Wow. All right. Who's next?
Do you want to be next, or do you want me to go?
Well, I did think of one, and, you know, it's weird, like clasps are something that I think draw ire from me on a daily basis, because I find, like, modern watches are just very chunky, and I feel like a lot of companies just sort of go with clumsy versus beautifully made, and I happened to go to an event late last year in London with Parmigiani.
Ooh.
I'd never gone hands-on with any of their watches, yeah? But I absolutely fell in love with the Tonda 36 millimeters. Have you guys seen that watch?
No.
I mean, maybe, but not, it doesn't... I'm familiar with the Tonda line, but not the 36 millimeter.
Yeah, I didn't know they made it in 36.
Stunning. Yeah, stunning.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
The free champagne probably didn't hurt, but the clasp was epic. It was epic. It was such a nice bracelet, by the way. I know we're not allowed to talk bracelet, but the clasp was really nice. It was like a hidden clasp with a little bit of a push button on the side. Just super thin. Totally not the right thing for a sports watch, but yeah, I was really blown away with the finishing on this, and to the point where I told our contact, I said, you know, I said, if at some point I get myself in position for one of these, I said, I will let you know. So yeah, gorgeous watch. And the clasp was really, it was really comfy. Like, a bad clasp can ruin a bracelet watch for me. It just can end up, you know, with a small wrist, can just, no good. But this was a really nice watch.
Yeah, I want to say that on, oh gosh, probably last year, for the Watches and Wonders podcast we did, I brought up their Rathrapan.
Oh, yeah.
You pronounce that. They just came out with, gosh, I guess 1 year ago, I want to say, hopefully. Fingers crossed, so I'm not going to fool myself here. That's one of, like, the best watches that came out of Watches and Wonders. So, yeah, Parmigiani, they make some cool stuff.
Incredible, yeah. Spence, don't fall asleep.
I'm not, so I'm trying to think, like, I'm trying to figure out how I want to take this, because I really like the clasp on my Tudor Black Bay. The ceramic ball bearings.
A lot of Tudor content here.
The ceramic
content.
Ball bearings, in some ways, I actually really enjoyed that almost more than the clasp on the modern sub that I had for a while. Just the feeling of the clicking of those ceramic ball bearings is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But they use those ball bearings elsewhere, and I'm going to be using that in a version of the watch later, so I'm not going to go with Tudor. And the only other clasp that I can think of that I really enjoy wearing on a regular basis comes on my Oris PPX with a little lift. There's something neat about essentially unbuckling the little seatbelt. And it's a little bit thicker at one end, but it integrates into the bracelet nicely, and it's a smaller mechanism. And I just think that there's something neat about that little mechanism there that they've designed for that watch, and that you both not only pull it up, but you actually have to push it down to secure it. Buzzy, you and I have talked about the idea of, you know, on most of your watches, unless it's you have a dive bezel or a chronograph pusher, like, you're interacting with your clasp more than you are physically with any other part of the watch. And that's one that I think is really well done. Like I said, I really, really like the Tudor clasp as well, but I'm going to use Tudor later. So, and again, the clasp on the Speedy is also very well done, but I'm going to use Omega later. So the Oris clasp, I think, when I think of other clasps, it's the one that I like the best.
Okay.
So that's where I'm going to go. That. Bangler, where are we going next?
Well, if we talked about the clasp first, we might as well move to the bracelet next.
Makes sense.
Work our way up. And so, yeah, you know, I did the T-fit for my clasp here. You know, I said I was going to use Rolex later on, but I feel like, after talking about this...
He's going to take the Rolex Jubilee!
I thought about that. But I'm like, you know what? I did the T-fit first. That's a pretty mainstream, watch slash clasp. It's like, I can't do another mainstream bracelet. Uh-oh. So I was going to take the Rolex Oyster, but, it's too mainstream. It's been done. Although, it is the best bracelet in the game. Let's be honest here. Anyway.
Jubilee disagrees, but go ahead.
So I figured, I'd go down my list of favorite bracelets of all time and go with, I guess, the next best one, which would be the Omega Flatlink bracelet. Iconic. It's not an Oyster, it's not a Jubilee, it's a very strange mix of in-between, and, I'll double down on this and say I'll take the flat link that is not fully brushed, it's polished on the end links. Oh. So center link is, brushed, outside's polished.
Interesting.
Which I think is the best version of the flat link. Good mix of classy slash sporty, super comfy. You can't really go wrong with it. So there you go. Buzzy. A bracelet.
Buzzy, what are you going to take?
So I do like that we started with the clasp, right? The most kind of hidden part. We're working our way around the wrist kind of to the main show, right? I also thought that a Oyster, pish posh, too plain. We're not going with any of that. We're going with a Breitling Rouleau.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Heck all right.
It's a great choice.
My,
are you going to take the Jubilee? My.
Unfortunately, all of you are wrong so far.
No.
Because I think while I do think the modern Speedmaster bracelet is a modern masterpiece, the greatest bracelet ever designed comfort wise is the Rolex Jubilee 6251, the folded Jubilee. If you've never put one of these on, well, you're just not living comfortably, I'm just going to tell you. It is like, how did they create this thing back in like the 1960s and 70s? And I don't know, everybody just forgot the plot since then. I'm not sure, but it's tremendous. If you've never tried one, the follow-up Jubilee with solid links was damn good too in the 90s. But the 6251 is a marvel. It's absolutely fantastic. So that's my choice.
Well, I guess you'll leave me. I will say the bracelet that gave me like one where I finally kind of understood the whole appeal of a watch was the one time I got to try on the Royal Oak. But that's not the bracelet I'm going to go with, even though that one, it was superb.
It's a hair puller. Go ahead, though.
Well, when you wear it for 5 minutes, you don't really have, and it's also not sized. You don't really get that. But I will, because you took the Jubilee, and not because you took the Jubilee, but because I was going to go ahead and go with, but I appreciate the compliment that you call the modern Speedy a modern masterpiece. That's the one that I was planning on going with anyway, was the bracelet on the modern Speedy, which I was wearing my Speedy earlier today. And that's a watch that I love the look of that watch on a strap, but as soon as I put it on a strap and I take a picture, I'm like, all right, get that sucker back on that bracelet.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, I've been cranky with Omega lately with their pricing and some of what they've come out with, like that Apollo 8 to me is just crazy expensive, right?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. But you get the little
Speedy. Yeah. Speedy Pro is like the saving grace, and I know it's gone up a lot in price, but gosh, that bracelet. Oof. So
good. It's really good. It's really
so good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fantastic. All right, Spangler, keep us moving.
All right. We've done bracelet. I guess we got to go to case. I feel like that's next on the agenda here, moving on up on the watch. And so for mine, you know, I kind of went with the everyday works for all watches clasp with the Tudor T-Fit. The Omega flat link bracelet is going to be good
for... I like how you're running down your prior picks, by the way. This is...
Yeah, I mean, right, I've actually prepared for this. This is a notebook sheet of words I've written down on it that helps me out.
This is how you bill so heavily at the veterinary clinic, isn't it? You just write down all the stuff that... Anyhow, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I tell everybody I don't set those prices. You know, I'm just here. I just
work the nitrile gloves I needed to use to check out that horse, you know. Anyhow, go ahead.
Oh, wait, you use sleeves. We don't use the glove. We have a full on elbow.
Full sleeve.
Yeah, full sleeve.
For those bad boys. To be afraid when you're rubbing elbows with veterinarians.
Yeah, you should. Yeah.
Arms clean. I take showers every day. I'm an adult. continuing on with my theme of works for everything here, let's go with, I figured I'd go with a case that is, kind of is a little bit of sporty, a little bit of a classy, chic. Of course, I'm going to steal the Grand Seiko here. But I'm going to go specifically with the 62 GS. It is probably my favorite of the iconic Grand Seiko cases.
Great call.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with it, right? Great mix of classy / everyday sportiness, Serato polishing, you know, it speaks for itself. It is what it is, and it's a great case, and I think I would like that on the watch that I am trying to build, if any watch brands are out there listening to me.
Wow. Yeah, nice pick. Really nice pick.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Buzzman.
So... if you hadn't figured out by now, the design ethos for my watch is more is more. We've got the Rouleau bracelet. That's not exactly simple. That's not plain, not understated. Neither is the case that I'm going with. It wouldn't be exactly the same details, because obviously this is a different bracelet that's fit to it, and I'm not so sure the bezel's coming with it. I'm not so sure that it would be the exact same, but it's a Constellation case.
Ooh. Honey.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Modern or kind of neo-vintage? That makes sense.
Manhattan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know whether the Roman numerals would stay, and then obviously the parts of the case that receive the bracelet would have to be different.
Hey, baby, I like my watches like I like my drinks. Manhattan.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of view. Yeah, that works.
That is. I can see the Rouleau working because of the way, like, that could work.
Works really.
I think it could work.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I've chosen a hidden clasp per se with what I think is really the beads of rice bracelet taken to the nth level, which is the Jubilee. And I'm going to pair that with my Calatrava 570 case, because I just absolutely love it. I think it's the most fantastic thing watch-wise. I absolutely love all the sharp angles, and yet it has things like rounded lugs from the profile. I love sweeping lugs. Yeah, it's such a simple watch, but on the other hand, I think it's so well designed. It's like nothing extra that you need. And sort of at once looks stressy and also kind of looks a little bit like a, dare I say, field watch. So, yeah, it's really, and maybe it's just sort of a sign of the times with me and the kind of watches I'm into now, but yeah, that's kind of what I would go for.
So I'm going to go a little off the wall here. Not terribly off the wall, because it's going to be a Rolex case, but a little off the wall. So, I mean, you all are probably thinking, oh, I'm not going to go. Not quite that off the wall.
King Midas.
That's even further. I'm going to go with the Yachtmaster 40 millimeter case.
Ooh.
Because it's sporty enough, but it has those rounded edges that I just think 40 millimeter, like you're going to see where I'm going here in a little bit, but I feel like 40 millimeter case with that Speedy bracelet and a little bit more of a sportier clasp from Oris. I know we're going to go to movement next, and I think I don't know that I'll surprise you all there. Like it may be something you guys weren't thinking of, but I think you'll be like, oh yeah, no, that makes sense. I think it goes really well with this case, and it would fit in the case, which is important. I don't know if Spengler's thought that far ahead. But that's where I'm at, is with the, like the rounded edges and kind of the sporty but subtle case of the Yachtmaster.
Yeah.
Okay. The Yachtmaster.
Yep. Not the Yachtmaster 2.
Didn't say the Yachtmaster 2, because I agree. Well,
remember,
with you.
That it's is the worst watch. All things considered.
You're wrong, by the way, Buzz. The Sky Dweller sucks too, but go ahead. Go
Thank
ahead.
You.
No. Does not
I
suck.
Like that watch.
Thank
Let's
you.
Calm down here.
Thank so, you.
I like that.
So clumsy, but go ahead.
As a command bezel, though.
Okay. Moving on here. Let's see.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll let right. the wrong half of the podcast hold their opinions on the Sky Dweller.
It's a cool watch.
Is it?
It is.
Yeah. It's not. Yes. It's not. Bald dudes win this one. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, based on this list, we could either go towards either dial or movement, or, you know, I heard one of us may have a bezel option on here.
Yeah, there will be a bezel spoken of at the end, but we can go to movement. Let's fill that case before we put the dial on top.
Let's fill the case. Okay, that's fine. Right, so, you know, this is probably my most, off-the-wall pick of my list here. But right, I'm a big chronograph fan. I feel like I've made that pretty evident here on the podcast. But I figured I'd go with a very interesting chronograph movement that isn't one that is, in the mainstream,
Springer.
I guess, idea. No.
Close.
Plus, I always use Grand Seiko. But it would be kind of cool. Yeah, it would be kind of cool. I need to get one of those watches. No, I went with one of the ones that is one of those New Kids on the Block specialty watch movement brands, because they're kind of trendy, and why not? So I went with the Anganor. I feel like I'm butchering that movement name. But they make some pretty cool chronograph movements. Like I said, less mainstream, super cool. It does not have the flourishes that a long chronograph has.
Talking about Anganor,
I believe it's spelled Agenhor. Swiss brand. At least they say they're Swiss. Who knows really where they're at? As seen in the, I guess, one of the main chronographs that came out recently, they're in the Moser Flybrack,
yes,
I believe.
Yes.
They're in Arlington, yeah. Faberge, and Hermes, some of the brands that they have been seen in. Like I said, it does not have the fancy engraved movement that some Longas have, or I guess all Longas have. Still is a very interesting looking and very cool looking chronograph movement. And be prepared to shell out a few shekels for any watch with that in it. So, yeah, so I'm going to go.
I haven't given any thought to the movement because I don't know. I think that in that case,
he's gonna just throw an edit in. He's throwing an edit. It's Salita.
No, I'm not. No, I'm doing the only reasonable thing for a very thin case is I'm going with one of Grand Seiko's bitchin' quartz three handers. Yeah, don't overthink it.
Nice.
It's all going right. to have the little two step.
So a 9F.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Why not?
Okay. Very nice.
Wait, which case did you pick again?
I've got the Manhattan Connie case.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Mm. That makes sense. Mm. Okay. 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 I got you.
So I need to pick, yeah?
Yes.
Well, I didn't really come up with a caliber, but you know, it's going to be a three-handed manual wind movement. There's no, it's interesting. Like, I've gone to a point now where with vintage watches and stuff, unless it's like a micro rotor or something, I just don't do automatics. Okay, with Seiko, maybe I would do like the 62 GS I own for sure. That's sort of landmark, but I really like manual wind watches. That's my wheelhouse. So, I think, you know, when I got the Calatrava, I gained an appreciation for just the finishing and all the bridge work and on the movement and how much hand finishing was done there. You know, the anglage on the edge of the plates and everything that's done. And then when winding it, I don't know if you guys have ever wound like sort of a, you know, like most manual wind movements, when you're winding it, it springs backwards a little bit, like the crown mm-hmm. comes back on you. And this movement, like when you wind it forward, it stops. Like there's no, there's nothing. It just feels like, I don't know if you've ever used like a bolt action rifle. Everything is just exacting, like perfect. It's what it feels like. So that's the 27SC. I'm sure any movement they make or any other high-end brand, you know, AP, Vacheron, Breguet would wind like that. So I'm good with anything in that realm, but I think that there's something absolutely joyous about winding a really nice manual wind movement. And by the way, like a Speedmaster winds really well too, so I don't want to like take away from that stuff, but yeah, since we're dreaming, I guess make it high end. Yeah. So there we go.
Yeah. I'm gonna keep mine simple because I'm gonna have to drill a couple extra holes in the case of the Yachtmaster to fit in the previous generation El Primero movement in there. I don't want the tenth of a second thing. I want to be able to track 12 elapsed hours. I want the high beat. I want everything. I love that old El Primero movement. That's what I want. That's what I want on that watch.
Nothing wrong with that.
No. I got to drill a couple extra holes in that Yachtmaster case, but we'll go with
that. I've got a drill press if you want.
We can make that happen. Yeah, I might. Are we on the dial?
Yeah, I believe so. If we're moving our way up the watch, I feel like we've hit dial. So for mine, I kind of went with the, I had the idea in mind for like the, pre-Daytona, Daytona, but it's like the all black dial Daytona. And so I figured, oh, what's the coolest like dial that is a black dial watch? And I'm like, oh, you know, you have Omega, you know, yada, yada. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go with a Moser's Vantablack dial.
Okay.
I want that all black.
Yeah.
I want it all black. I want black subdials, white hands, you know, and I want it to be black as black, which apparently Vantablack is black as black can get. So, yeah, that's what I'm going to go with for my
the blackest
my dial.
It can get.
Yeah, I want a 3 subdial, you know, 60 seconds, the 12 hour, the 1 hour, I think, is the other one. I've had a few to drink here, so I'm not reading what the typical sub dials are in a chronograph. Vantage Black Dial. Three sub dials.
That's a cool idea, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool dial. I really like that dial a lot.
It is cool.
And it's very black, so you got that going for you, which is nice.
Very black.
Yep.
I was really hoping that Vanta Black was going to come up. So,
You're welcome, Buzz.
My hopes and dreams are being fulfilled. I mean, in the podcast.
Any engineering tidbits you can give us about that dial?
No, not really. I'm guessing there's quite a decent amount of texture at the micro level to
absorb all that light.
Well, so here's the fun thing. In the previous life, Photons and I were friends, and
Photons.
It's funny because if you're really trying to sense really small signals, you gotta get your noise, get rid of your noise. So, you know, you baffle things so stray incident light can't bounce into your detectors. And for a really good measure, if you're interested in really low levels of detection, so not only do you put baffles in, but you like baffle the baffles. So it's it's really fun. It's not a good thing for for the purely spoken word. It makes a lot more sense if you draw it out. But it's funny stuff. Photons are silly. It's the truth. Okay.
Seriously, Mrs. Buzz must be like, is she pretty insane? Much.
She's working on it.
Unbelievable. Do you talk to her about photons?
Never. That trick only worked once on her. Yeah, that's why she said yes when I popped the question. But buttered her up with some photon talk ahead of time.
Oh, man. It's like that meme where the guy's like leaning up in the nightclub, right? Like talking about something really, like all the watch memes they do. Yeah. And like she's like,
the guy in the baseball game. Yes. Talking to the lady. Yep. Yeah. This one, I would like to take, like I said, the theme is more is more here. Rulo bracelet, Connie case. I want a royal oak pattern on the dial, but take like 80% off. I want it to be very faint, right? Because there's already so much going on, but I do want some sort of geometric patterning on the dial. But I don't want it to just jump out and club you over the head like it does on the Royal Oak or its, you know, three-figured cousin, the PRX. So that's where I'm landing. And as far as the markers, I don't really know what I would do with that.
Oh, yeah. I guess I didn't really mention markers either.
You don't need to. Do we...
Let's not get overly specific here.
How many more categories do we have left on this?
Well, Spengler's watch is going to fall apart because he's not selecting a bezel. I'm going to select a bezel to keep it all together.
Since I've already
selected the bezel because it literally comes with the case. I do think the hands off of the Aquas would be fun. Maybe narrow them up just a little bit, but I like loom on things, so I would want a hand that has some room for Lumen. I think it would be fun.
Okay. I'm with you. All right, Mike, what have you got for your dial?
I've got four numbers. 10, 16.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
That's where I'm going. I still think it's probably one of my favorite dials ever.
Yeah.
I think it's perfectly balanced, everything. It's just fantastic. Yeah,
because of this.
I think the argument could be made that it's Rolex's most iconic dial of all time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, it's perfect. I mean, you just can't argue with it, can you, really?
No.
So, I don't even need to talk about photons, protons.
You're talking about the radiation.
Quarks.
Oh, yeah. So, how about radiation if you get a tritium dial?
Oh, yeah.
What a space dweller. That's hilarious.
So, I guess.
Come on.
You know, go ahead. Every time I think of dials, now granted, I'm picking this because it's a chronograph dial, because I picked a chronograph movement. It'd be silly to pick a three-hander dive watch dial with a El Primero movement inside of it. Excuse me. Wow. Missed the mute button. There. My bad. anyway.
Amateur hour.
Yeah, I know. You know, we've never done this before. What I was going to say, though, is when I think of excellent dial work, I know that I think of Breitling. That's not really what everybody else would say, but I will say, Buzzy, you picked a Rulo bracelet. I got to tell you, there's salmon with black subdial chronograph dial.
Oh.
From the Chronomaster. No, that's not the Chronomaster. What's the name of the watch the Rulo comes on? Why am I blanking on that? I've only had
Chronomat.
The Chronomat. That was close. Not Chronomaster is the Zenith. Chronomat is the Breitling. But that salmon with the black subdials, that's a stunner of a dial. Shrink it down to fit into the 40mm Yachtmaster case with the El Primero movement. That is where I'm at. That one.
Yeah.
Salmon, black subdials. Banger.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I guess we can finish this off with the bezel then here.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's do it.
We're going, inevitably. I picked
the crystal, the crown, the...
No, okay.
The box, the...
You know, I'll just... Yeah.
What type of champagne does the boutique serve? Come on.
Yeah.
I figured I'll just recap here what I've gone with here. It's the Tudor T-Fit clasp, the Omega Flatlink bracelet, the 62GS case, a non-Gnore chronograph movement, and a Moser Vanta Black dial, three subdials. Then I go with, I feel like I haven't hit on any micro brands yet here, and I feel I'm sorry if somebody else was thinking about these bezels as an option for their watch. But I figured I'd go with Formex's new interchangeable bezel options. Sweet. For this. Because who doesn't want a little bit of a variation in their watches?
That's fair.
Why not? It's a little fun.
It's kind of fun cheating, little thing they got going fair. On.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it came to mind. It's a fair game.
All right. Well, since we can skip Buzzy because his bezel is part of the case... Mr. Stockton, what bezel are you picking?
Yeah, I really dig the coin edge bezel that, you know, the step bezel right angle that comes on the Calatrava. I think that would look really cool with that dial. I just think it's a very clean, simple look. You don't need anything else, so I'm sticking with it.
Well, then I guess that leaves it to me, and I hinted at this earlier, but I am going to take the – honestly, I don't really care about bezel insert. I really kind of like the steel that comes on my black base steel, but like I want the Tudor bezel mechanism. I think that is just the way those ball bearings, like it is just fantastic. It's one of the, it's the best bezel I've had. And that includes the sub that I had. It just, it, the way it clicks in, it's like, you can't beat it. So I'd probably stick with steel to keep the watch a little bit more understated, given that it has the Chronomat salmon dial. But yeah, I would go and I'd slap a dive bezel on the chronograph and let's just keep track of everything. From a timing perspective, let's just keep track of all of it. So that's where I'm at.
Oh, it's a good idea. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Why not time as many things as you can?
Absolutely.
It is a watch after all.
That's what it was made for. Yeah. Tell the time and to keep track of time and to count elapsed time. So,
well, count photons as well. I mean, why not?
Or prevent them from escaping. Right. You know, it's Spangler's case.
So. Yeah, exactly.
But anyway,
that was
fun. Covered a lot. We covered a lot there.
Yeah,
we cover a lot. I'm trying to think. I don't think I have anything else from a critique standpoint on Buzz's recent commentary. Yeah.
Well, I guess we can end with what's the best champagne you've ever been served in a boutique, Mike?
Oh, the one that keeps getting refilled. No.
Yes.
No, I'm not gonna lie. I don't mind champagne, but and I guess like the drier the better. I'll just put it that way, but. I think until I met my wife, I never really drank any of it. I mean, it was like typical American. I mean, in America, you open a bottle of champagne for a special occasion, right? Like, we don't knock that stuff down routinely, do we? Anybody here?
No, not particularly. Now, my wife is a big fan of a lot of it doesn't come from the Champagne region of France, but there's a decent amount of sparkling wine that gets opened up. You know,
okay,
that's kind of her, that's been her go-to
popular,
drink,
right? Yeah. Like Prosecco and other things have become more popular in the last five, six years. But yeah, I mean, I never drank it before I met my wife, who, having lived in Southeast Asia, that was like a typical thing on the weekend, like these bottomless brunches where they would just serve it. And so, yeah, but where was I recently? Well, I was on a plane. When I flew over here, I drank quite a bit of champagne. And then, yeah, some of the watch events, they just keep pouring it. And, yeah, I mean, it's not dislikable, you know? Especially when the price is right, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. But
I love that André champagne.
Yeah, the André. But I have been to a lot of events where, you know, they're pouring Vauve or something good, and I've gone up and said, "Do you have a beer?" Like, yeah. So, yeah. Not the champagne of beers. I mean, unfortunately, in Europe, you can't get that, but...
That's a travesty.
Yeah.
It is a travesty.
But, yeah, sometimes you just want a beer, so...
That's true. That is true. Get old crispy boy.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I think we always seem to push our record length when you're on. So
yeah, this should
this is great. This should take you for at least another 5K. Like, you know, the 5K that you ran the other day with the dog. Oh. You should, and not even, there was no race. There was nothing else. You just went out and ran a 5K just to, you know, no diseases to be cured, no nothing, just running a 5K. That just, you know.
Just wanted to punish my knees. That's it. Yeah.
You know.
I was working for Miller Lite, you know. That's what it was.
There you go. Not even the champagne of beers, the next step up.
So, I might have to go get a sixer of that. If I can find a sixer, it might only be in a 12er down here. I don't know, but.
I have confidence in you that you can handle a 12er.
Seeing as the 12ers are only $9, I think, yeah, it's probably in your best interest to get the...
Is it still only $9?
At least at the Harris tier that I shop at, yes, so it is $9. And the total wine.
Kicked it over $10, that's nice.
Nope, yeah. It is $8.99.
Nice.
Ooh, not even $9. Right. Well,
yeah,
with tax.
It's, yeah.
Sounds like a mission tomorrow. So.
But as always,
well, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah.
We always have so much to talk about because it's, I don't say it's fewer and farther between, but we try to catch you when we're all in the same time zone. So.
Yeah, and after some cool news or something. So.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a pleasure having you on, and you know, until next time.
Thank you for having me.
It was great.
Thank you for joining us. I'm sure you've got a busy slate because it's probably going to be Stockton week again. Usually when you're stateside, we all try to hit you up.
No way. Well, Matt sent us a picture of a goulash he made in California. Oh,
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was so bad, I'm not going on that podcast for a while.
You put him in the penalty box.
That's
for the goulash.
But,
yeah. For the goulash. All right. Well, until next time, Buzzy.
See ya.